This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers, Benzinga's pick as the number one best broker for mutual funds. IBKR's mutual fund marketplace provides low-cost access to more than 40,000 mutual funds, including 8,300 with no transaction fees. Learn more at ibkr.com/funds and masterworks.io, where you're invited to join an exclusive community investing in blue chip art. Check out the artful opportunities at masterworks.io and use promo code TDI.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The employment situation is healing. Treasury and the Fed stumbling over themselves regarding inflation. We have a tech sell-off, thinking about peak earnings, and our guest today is Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. All this and much more on episode number 713 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey there. And a happy Mother's Day to you. Welcome to episode number 713 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. You know, we live in some crazy times, and I got to tell you something. I'm getting a lot of emails that are talking about just that. Like, hey, what is going on, and why are things so out of whack right now? And you've been sending those in to me, and I want to thank you for those, of course. You can always go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew button, and send me in your comments and your thoughts and your ideas. As a way of introduction, hey, I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm the host of this podcast. I'm also co-host of DH Unplugged with my co-host and cohort, John C. Dvorak. And on that show, which we do every Tuesday night live at 9 p.m., and of course you can find it on any good podcast directory out there, we talk about things like cooking and the lighter side of finance. We also spend a lot of time deconstructing the world of investing. We play some games. We have listener interactions. And of course, we have our weekly stock pick game that we do each and every week. We try to find some interesting opportunities that are out there. Now, last week on the show, we talked about the idea of reversing the concept that we put together over the last year of the 1 foot in and 1 foot out. And I think it struck a nerve because a lot of people were commenting and saying, hey, you know, what do we do? Is this a time when we should sell out? And I guess this idea that I put together, this simple concept to consider changing from the rebalancing and dollar cost averaging in, if again, you were fully invested at this point and looking at what we have in front of us, the idea of inflation and higher taxes, maybe even the idea that we've hit a wall in earnings. We've reached peak earnings. The thought was that maybe it's time to rebalance, reshuffle, and get yourself set for the next phase, however long that takes. And I think we need to continue that discussion. We're going to get into that with our guest today and definitely dig down into the concept of where we're heading, what lies ahead, where things are situated, what impact will inflation have if it does in fact continue. A new concept being brought is the idea of layered inflation rather than transitory, which I don't know why we have to put labels like that. It's inflation or it's not inflation, right? I mean, is there good inflation versus bad inflation? Well, yeah. A small amount of inflation is a required part of the puzzle when it comes to economics to keep the money flow going and keep people interested in buying, of course. And whether we get above a level and then we start saying, well, we're stacking it or layering it over time, is that going to be a problem? Or if it happens all at once, is that a bigger issue? I think it's a nuance. It's a picayune idea of looking at and trying to make ourselves feel better about this idea that, well, yeah, there is inflation. So we're going to talk to Frank about that. Before we do that, and at the front of the show, I want to talk about Interactive Brokers. IBKR is definitely what we call the professional's gateway to the world's markets. IBKR offers commissions starting at $0 for U.S. listed stocks and ETFs. They have enhanced price execution via their IB Smart routing and access to the incredible power of their software and their platform called Trader Workstation. They have web, mobile, API trading platforms. You can join the clients from over 200 countries and territories to invest globally in stocks and options, in Forex. What else? They have bonds. They have funds from a single integrated account at the lowest cost. All you have to do to check this out is go over to ibkr.com and you'll find everything you need to understand more about this extraordinarily powerful platform. So as I promised, I have a guest today, and I want to bring on someone who's really smart and in tune with the markets and can explain all of this. But instead, I got Frank Curzio.
I was going to say, you got the wrong guy, man.
Frank, welcome back to the show, an all-time favorite of our listeners. So I wanted to bring you back and talk about all the things that are going on, which is, it's the news doesn't stop. This week, the information about, now IP protection for vaccines are an issue. We saw Janet Yellen stumble and fall and walk back things, and we see the issues of inflation percolating up. So I got a lot of different things that I want to talk to you about. By the way, Frank Curzio, you can find all the information over at Frank Curzio or CurzioResearch.com, and he's great newsletters and all that, and we'll probably get more into that. But I don't know where to start. Do you want to start with the topic of economics? You want to talk about this concept of peak earnings, inflation?
I think we cover all of that, right? I mean, it's really important. We could start with peak earnings season because what are we seeing here? You're seeing a lot of companies report, and especially the FANGs, blowout numbers, which, Facebook and Google went up a little higher on those, but they were really big beats across the board.
Huge beats, not big beats. They were enormous beats. They were like the analysts had no idea what the numbers should be.
No, I mean, these were 30 to 40% higher than estimates. If you're taking that estimate, the current earnings in Q1, and you're looking at either Facebook or Google, these companies, based on those earnings, right? So if earnings go higher and stock prices stay the same, your stock on a PE gets cheaper, right? So yep. These stocks are trading around 23 times forward earnings, and they're growing earnings north of 30% each. So they're not even that expensive, but it just shows you how powerful they are. But what's the trend that we're seeing is even the companies that beat, some of them will go up a little. Most of them are actually coming down, even with great numbers. And the companies that miss are really getting nailed now. So it's pretty crazy when you look at it, because it looks like everything's fine. The S&P 500 is trading at highs, and NASDAQ sold off a little bit last week, so it's off its highs. But the underlying trends, when you're looking at these ESG stocks, you're looking at SPACs. I mean, a lot of this speculative stuff has been getting nailed, which is telling you what, that these are the stocks that get hit the most when inflation starts rising. Why? Because the Fed's probably going to do something, which they have to do. We'll cover that in a minute. It's not going to be fun when they're raising rates and taking away the punch bowl. And what happens, a lot of leverage comes out of the market, and that hurts a lot of these speculative names. But, even staying with earnings here, I don't know if we're at peak earnings. I mean, corporate taxes are going to go higher.
Right.
If you don't think there's a big deal, Andrew, I mean, anyone thinks that's not a big deal. And, that's what we hear. Oh, it's no big deal. They should be paying more. In 2017.
Right. That's exactly the point. Let's simplify this whole discussion. It's very easy.
Yes.
In 2017, in 2016, there was a promise made that corporate taxes would go down. A promise. Mm-hmm. And instantly we saw the markets react violently to the upside. And that was a change.
Even if you're not looking at, violently to the upside, right? We're looking at the stock prices, but let's talk about earnings. I mean, 2017 S&P 500 earnings were at $118. That was the year before the tax cuts went in, which was 2018. So to put that in perspective, in 2014, the total S&P earnings, so if you add them all up for all 500 companies, was 115. That was 2014. 2017, 118. So we saw almost no growth for 4 years. In 2018, after the tax cuts, earnings shot up to $140 from $118.
Yep.
It was because of the tax cuts. So anyone saying that higher corporate taxes is not that big of a deal is just not looking at the numbers. Yeah, it's a huge deal.
Right, exactly. So if you just take the idea of what occurred and how the reaction was to the lower tax rate and how that passed through immediately, you have to say, well, if we're going to back that off and reverse that either totally or partially, there's got to be some kind of implication for earnings. It's a very simple calculation, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And with these earnings, you know, people are probably like, well, you know, it's factored in, it's priced. It's hard to determine all this stuff because they're handing out so far $10.5 trillion. And people are staying home right now because they're making more money. They're still sending out checks, and they have no indication that they're going to stop anytime soon or keep interest rates low or stop QE bond buying. And as long as this is taking place, yes, you know, you're going to see the markets inflated. But eventually, you know, what are we seeing, Andrew? The inflation. Guys, you should be very, very scared of inflation. I know that even for me, being in the markets, I mean, we're talking about 70s and 80s the last time we saw massive inflation, double-digit inflation. And what Volcker had to do is he had to go in there and make it very, very painful. He had to raise rates tremendously, which caused two recessions, right? Took the punch bowl away.
Yep.
And, you know, that's the way you stop inflation. Inflation can't get stopped where, you know, we look at 2008 and the banks messed up and we know, right? They're a greedy son of a you-know-what, and they got bailed out. Now they're bigger than ever. And why didn't we get inflation then? Because we came from such a, like
a
inflation.
Hole. A hole.
A hole of such a yeah. low, right? And everybody right. was kind of surprised. I was surprised. Almost anyone was surprised, even through 2013, 14, 15, why they keeping interest rates low still, but they never saw inflation. So now,
well, but,
right?
But the difference now is, let me just say the one difference. There's a glaring difference between then and now. Back then, there was a bailout of the banks, which then trickled down to a bailout to many of the homeowners that, you know, leveraged up and all that. But there was the major difference was that the fiscal stimulus, the large amounts that went into the system back in the days when we thought, you know, and after we saw Lehman and Bear Stearns, went to the banks, went to the baseline infrastructure of the financial system. Today, yes. The money's going directly into the pockets of people that consume. Banks do not buy T-shirts.
No, and they didn't have to back then.
Right.
And just to put in perspective, with TARP, it was, what, 700 and some. It turned out to be $450 billion. And this was just used to shore up the banks to say, hey, we got capital. We're fine. The system's not going to collapse. Like you said, this is money going directly to consumers, directly. The PPP loans go directly to businesses. And you're saying you don't have to pay them back. The checks are still coming. But $450 billion back then, that wasn't really filtered into the market, $10.5 trillion, it's 50% of GDP, and now everything's starting to reopen. So all these people are dying to spend money. You look at the casino numbers, Caesars, record highs. You see a lot of these companies report record highs, and hotels are opening back up again. It's pretty insane. But, you know, why is the Fed doesn't see this? I could tell you, you know, Andrew, what's the Fed's mandate when it comes to inflation? What's their mandate usually? What do they say?
2%. Or now exactly. They change the rule to an averaging process for 2%.
Okay. It has nothing to do with 2% anymore because we're way past 2%. We're over 4%. If you take last month's number, March's number for the CPI, and you add that number and say it's going to be exactly the same next 12 months, right? Compound annual rate, you're looking at over 4%. And it's going to be higher going forward, right? We're seeing it lumber, commodity prices, real estate prices, everything. It's going higher. We're 4%. And the CPI, which is a gauge, Reagan changed back then, not political at all, but he changed it to where you almost it's impossible to see inflation, right? Even though we all see it, that's the gauge the Fed looks at.
Well, they also strip out things like food and energy.
Yeah, or even food some and energy and all this.
Because we don't consume and pay for that stuff.
I know, right? Which is insane. But now what's the Fed doing? Here's the problem. Because it's not 2% inflation, because we're over that right now. And you know, they should see that. Core import prices are up 8%. I mean, it's insane. These are crazy numbers. But the Fed wants to get unemployment back under 4 million to the record. That's where it was pre-pandemic. It was around 4 million. And we went to 20 million a couple months ago during COVID. Now we're at 10, and they're looking to get it down to 4 million, right? So, but the thing is, you're handing out free money to everybody, and these people are making more money staying home than they are working. So they continue to inflate this market, thinking these people are going to go to work. Where I live in Florida, everything's been open for a year. been awesome here. People wear masks. I know you guys probably see pictures and stuff like that. Irresponsible. It's responsible here. People have been doing the right thing. But everything's been open. The con has been open. And businesses right now are operating at 60%. They're allowed to operate 100%. They can't find any restaurants, bars. They can't find anyone to work. Nobody wants to work.
I was telling you, I was in St. Augustine last weekend, and it was very busy. And restaurants were open. Things were happening. People were there. Two-hour waits at some of the restaurants. I walk into the restaurant. You know, it's a two-hour wait. I'm like, wow, what's going on here? How good is the food? It's got to be great. What's the atmosphere? What's going on, right? I'm thinking, hey, you know, I have a theory. The more crowded the restaurant is, those are the ones I want to go to, right? So I, which, by the way, lends the idea for any marketer out there, just park cars in front of a restaurant. Just permanently park cars in front of a restaurant. People will think it's busy.
Yeah.
So I go into these restaurants and I look around. I'm like, oh, look at all the tables that are open. Man, what's going on? So I went up to the manager. I said, hey, what's going on with all the tables that are open? And he says, well, the problem is that, yes, there's a long wait. And the fact of the matter is we have these tables open, but I can't sit people at those tables because I have nobody that will, number one, cook to the level we need to if we have full capacity. And I have nobody that will serve you. Everybody is either in and out, comes back for a little while, then decides that, you know what, I can collect my few $100s, I'm like that, whatever it is, per week, and not work. Why should I bother hassling coming to work? There are signs everywhere in St. Augustine for please come and work for us.
Yes.
And we've all heard these stories. And it's a real problem. The incredible ass backwards nature of what they are trying to do. By the way, PPP ran out this week. They're out of money. I don't know if they're going to renew it again. I don't know how that's going to work. Supposedly still millions of people waiting for checks on that one. But now you have a situation where a significant amount of people are not working because they don't have to. And everybody's trying to be nice and said, well, they can't work. And what if they want to make a choice and not work? And, you know, they're concerned and they're afraid. I mean, you're never going to get things back to normal. Then the second part is if you think about something, Frank, and I talked about this in the last couple of shows. I want you to remember back to 2008, 9, 10, when the Fed said, no, we can't raise rates because at that time, inflation wasn't where it should be. 2011, 2012, 2013. Mm-hmm. But yet the employment numbers kept coming down. Do you remember when they said, well, when it gets to about 6%, we're going to stop? When they got to 6%, what did they do? 5.5. It got down really low. They used as their cover the idea that they needed to get inflation up no matter what the employment numbers were. Now they're doing the reverse. Now they're saying no matter what inflation is, we need to get the employment numbers down. There's never a time that is good to raise rates. They're deathly afraid for a couple of reasons. One, they're so concerned about the wealth effect and the potential on what that will do to markets. And the second thing is because they've been trained by taper tantrums and all these things that happen. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that there is a, I think the appropriate and the technical word is butt ton of debt that is outstanding by the U.S. government, and raising rates will cause the debt service to go to such a level that it will crimp the economy long term due to the debt payments that are required. So what say you?
Listen, there's only one way to cure inflation. You go to the restaurants. My wife and I went out to restaurants. We went out to eat my family a week ago, and we went to the outlets first in St. Augustine, and then we went to we tried to go to one of our restaurants, favorite restaurants, and they close at 10. They close at 8 o'clock. Then we went to another one. We went to Buffalo Wild Wings and said, okay, Buffalo Wild Wings usually open at 12. We went there. They close at 10. Everybody closed. There was three different restaurants we went to, and the one that was open had a line out the door at 11 o'clock, and they closed at 12. They said it was over an hour wait. It was 11:15 when we called. The hour wait, they closed at 12.
11:15, and your kids that are under 15 years old, you're taking out at 11? Yeah. What kind of a father are you?
It was a Friday night. We went out, and just my oldest daughter went out with us, so she's 13. But it was, you know, we wanted to eat earlier, and then we went to Chipotle, and Chipotle was closed at 9:30. So we said, all right, let's go shopping, and we hit one more store. And then at 10:15, we tried to go, and then everything was just closed, and we were all starving, and we wound up eating Arby's. But everyone had a sign saying, I know, it's terrible. But that was, the healthiest meal. But the point is how do you get these people to work? Because all of them had signs saying that they're understaffed. So what do? You have to raise price. If you're going to pay them more money, you're going to have to raise prices for food. You're going to have to raise prices on everything. And we're seeing that inflation carry over everywhere, even in the gauges that are CPI, core import prices. It's there. It's here, right? So now you have inflation through the roof. You have copper, lumber, housing, right? Perfect signs. This is what happened in the 70s and 80s. It was you know, commodities surging. It was wages rising, and you had real estate rising. And we have all three of those things happening right now. We didn't see wages rise when houses rose in 2006, 2007, when we saw that big bubble, right? We didn't have all three. Now we do, right? So, Andrew, we have all assets that are surging. And like we talked earlier, it's different from 2008 since, you know, they were coming from a deflationary environment. Today, GDP, right, this year expected to grow 7%.
Well, that's a little bit of an aberration, because we're also, if you average the last 2 years, we're just getting back to the ridiculous levels that we were at a year ago. But so GDP, I kind of take a little bit off the table from that. But I do agree that the rest of the equation, where you're talking about, you know, prices going up across the board, and really, I don't know if any sectors necessarily. I mean, even look at oil with all the electric cars we have and all that. Oil is at the mid 60s.
Going higher.
Yeah, Goldman said it's going to the 80. Lumber's an all-time high. Copper's at an all-time high. We're back to 2011, I guess. You know, we're seeing various foodstuffs prices move up dramatically, and people not caring what they pay. I mean, where is that pain point, though, Frank?
The pain point is definitely coming, and I think you're seeing it even with earnings. Because if you're looking at earnings, and FactSet does a good job, guys, they actually provide a 20-page report every like 3 weeks. So you can go on Google, just put FactSet earnings, you know, PDF, and it comes up. And it's amazing, as they break down everything. And they're saying that, which is pretty obvious to anyone who's paying attention out there, who's just shopping and watching prices, that more companies have mentioned the word inflation on their Q1 calls than any time in the past 15 years. Every single company is raising prices across the board. If you look at all these companies are raising prices, everybody's raising prices. Coca-Cola, Netflix, everyone is raising prices, right? So you're seeing that inflation, which is going to get worse. And what's the Fed doing here? Pedal to the metal.
Keep
interest rates low, right? We're going to keep low forever. Continue buying bonds, QE. $10.5 trillion in spending already done. We have what? A $2 trillion, maybe it's $1.5 trillion, whatever it is, more coming in infrastructure, right? It's insane that they are still pedal to the metal when we see massive inflation. And it's not the 2% number, because we're blowing past that.
Right.
It's the unemployment rate, which is never going to get down that low, because these people are making more money staying home. And that's why, you know, you're not seeing these restaurants. It's a huge, huge labor shortage. So, I mean, inflation's here. That's what scares me, because how do you cure inflation? You can't throw money at it. It's not like something, it's like long-term capital management. It's not the banking crisis. It's not, you know, the financial crisis. You just print unlimited money. This is, in order to stop inflation, you got to take money out of the system. You have to take leverage out of this. It's a painful process. It's almost guarantees a recession. You got to raise rates. You got to start selling bonds instead of buying them. You got to take away the punch bowl. That's the only way to control inflation. And we're there. We're getting there where it's going to go higher and higher. I wouldn't be surprised if a year from now we're closing in on double-digit inflation. That's how crazy it's going to be. Because right now we are very, very high. And if they're looking at the unemployment, they continue to look at it. So Janet Yellen did a good job. And people make fun of her, but she actually came out the first person out of all the Fed governors, Fed chairman, yeah, again, Treasury Secretary. I wish she was a Fed chairman. She said, you know, we might have to raise rates. And she quickly dialed it back.
I want to get to that in a second. But let me just let me take a quick break. And I mean, this is really where I can segue perfectly into this discussion about Masterworks, because listen, a lot of people are really concerned about the performance of their portfolios over the next several years. In fact, right on what you're talking about, JP Morgan, BlackRock, and many other analysts are projecting public equity returns, you know, stocks earning 3-5% over the next 5 years, considerably lower than what we've seen. So whether or not that plays out exactly, the point is what we've been talking about on the last several shows is the idea of inflation and getting your portfolio ready for some of this, looking at some of those inflation assets and inflation protection assets and alternatives. I mean, even the analysts at Bank of America are urging investors to consider real assets a part of their inflation strategy due to all this government spending. So then you got to ask, well, where are people putting their money? Where are all these people that know about this going? So there's plenty of research on prices that show endowments like Yale and Harvard and others, and many top asset managers are looking towards alternative investments. And we've been talking about that. As a matter of fact, endowments that are over $1 billion, when you look at them and break them down, the average endowment is investing 55% in alternatives. And those managers have really produced some impressive returns for decades. So you should know about some other investment alternatives. Yeah, we've been talking about this, and we're talking about what? Well, we're talking about art. Studies have shown that contemporary art has produced 14% annually from 1995 to 2020, outperforming other real assets like real estate and gold. Masterworks.io is disrupting the centuries-old asset class by selling shares in multi-million dollar paintings from artists like Banksy, Picasso, and Warhol. And for the first time ever, you can allocate a portion of your portfolio to one of the best performing asset classes over the past 25 years with Masterworks.io. And if you want to get started, go to Masterworks.io, use code TDI to skip the 30,000 person waitlist. You can also see important information at Masterworks.io/disclaimer. So with that, we talk about alternatives and all that, and we talk about some of the things that are going on that are a bit wonky in the markets. And you touched on this idea or this comment that, you know, Janet Yellen came out this last week and said, hey, you know, eventually, if things go pretty well and, you know, we're seeing that we are having some inflation and price continue rising, yeah, we're going to have to see some interest rates moving higher. And all of a sudden that set off the alarms, right? Markets kind of caved in on that. And all of a sudden we had the Fed parade come out, and she eventually did what? She she walked it back, didn't she?
Well, I mean, you had someone like, probably Pelosi said, hey, what are you doing?
Right.
That's not what you're supposed to be telling people right now. And Biden was like, hey, you know, walk that back, and walked it back immediately. So, you know, again, it's supposed to be different. The Fed and politics are supposed to be separate. They haven't been for the last, you know, 20 years.
Well, that's the other problem. Since when's the Fed, you know, they're talking about if we have inflation, we have all these tools that we can utilize. Who's the we? I thought there was an independent Fed out there. Sure. What does the Treasury have to be talking about? Or does Janet Yellen just kind of, unfortunately, live in a world that she was a former Fed chair and she just can't get out of that mode?
I think she spoke her mind. It was so funny because this was like 12 hours later. She actually said, we don't see any inflation at all. There's no inflation problem.
It's right. That like was the first thing.
There's nothing to see.
Right. That was earlier in the week. Right. No inflation. We're not concerned about it. We're fine.
It was great. There's no inflation. Tell everybody that there's no inflation. Commodities at all time highs, asset prices, real estate prices. Try to buy a home. There's a waiting list to buy homes. It's flying off the market. Every single asset price is higher than it's been. Wages are starting to rise and everything, but there's no inflation.
But Frank, it's interesting because the truth of the matter is that a statement like if we see inflation and prices keep going on, eventually we're going to have to raise rates. That is a very basic component of reality. Why is it that the markets are so sensitive, like abnormally sensitive and fearful and you know, twist themselves up?
They should be sensitive, right? I mean, do you see the amount of leverage in the marketplace? Leverage is okay. Leverage is not a bad thing, right? That's how Warren Buffett became one of the richest people in the world. People understand. That's why you buy, you know, insurance.
Yeah, but the idiot didn't buy Bitcoin, so screw him.
Those pools of money, you can leverage it, right? So, but you know, when we're seeing inflation and we're seeing this, there's going to be serious consequences to this. There's going to be serious consequences to this. I mean, Buffett has written extensively about this, Andrew. And if you go back, you look Google, stuff like that, we just never really had inflation. So anyone in the market in the past decade or, you know, even past 15 years.
Past 20 years.
Yeah, they haven't. But even, you know, back then, at least they were still studying it, you know, maybe from 10 years ago. The fact that we've never seen this, it's amazing. It's amazing that
I remember.
People don't understand it and how that's such a big risk. And what does that do? You're taking leverage out of the market, and we have massive, massive leverage in the market. If you look at Bitcoin, you can leverage your Bitcoin like 30, 40 to 1 right now. And these kids have been doing a great job, made a fortune, and it's going into Ethereum, Dogecoin, and Dogecoin. That's another conversation. But you know, you're going to take leverage out of the market. That's why you're probably seeing the Russell 2000 actually start underperforming a little bit after it had a great month in November, December.
And technology. And the high.
You're taking leverage out of the market. So you say, well, technology, the balance sheets are great. Listen, their clients, if you're raising rates, that's less money people could borrow. That's less money that people are going to be spending. And that's going to hurt the bottom lines for every company, including technology companies. So, you know, they're going to have to lower their CapEx, and that's going to impact, you know, their marketing budgets and everything else. So that's why they get hit as well. But this is a very, very big problem. This is one of the things that I'm fearful of, and you should kind of protect yourself. I'm not telling you to sell everything and the market's going to crash tomorrow.
Well, we talked about something. You know, I created this idea, this concept about a year ago, and I talked about this a lot. Everybody's going to say, oh, we talked about this already, Andrew. Yeah, okay. But I talked about this whole idea of, you know, people didn't want to get into the market. They were afraid. They were out, you know, back March, April, May, June of last year. And I talked them through the idea of this 1 foot in, 1 foot out. You don't have to be all in or all out. You just have to be balanced, diversified, properly in, use some dollar cost averaging to get in and all that. And just last week, I talked about the reverse of that concept, which is 1 foot out, 1 foot in. Very simple. Let's keep it simple, right? Which is, hey, you know what? If you're all in at this point, maybe it makes sense to kind of take some of those profits off a little bit and rotate around your portfolio into those assets that maybe are better inflation protectors, maybe value versus growth, maybe kind of, you know, looking at inflation protected bonds, maybe some commodities, maybe alternatives. One quick story. We're talking about inflation and, you know, when's the last time we saw inflation? I remember back in the 80s when Volcker was busting inflation and interest rates skyrocketed on the short end of the spectrum. And my mother would take me once a month and we'd go bank shopping. And we would take money that she got, I guess it was maybe a cashier's check or something, from one bank, and go find another bank that would give her the best rate, plus maybe a toaster. And we would go do this every month. And she would always give me, It was called the change. And I wonder what that was. So I'm just picking a number. If she deposited like $25,000 and it was a 12% 1 month CD, so you divide that out, whatever it is, and maybe she made, I don't know, $2,510 or something like that, she would always give me the change, the $10 on it. But we would do that. That was something to be done. And nobody was buying long-term CDs. No. You weren't buying a five-year CD. You were buying a 1, 2, or 3 month CD at best because you thought that the rate in the future was going to be higher, which is the whole point of inflation. The idea that prices will be higher in the future. That's why the Fed likes it. They want to have some, but not too much. Now, some of these other things that are cropping up lately, you know, I think we talked about the fact that, well, we have some reopening going on and people are going back to work. We saw 750,000 on the ADP. We saw a decent employment number this week. Okay, fine. We've been seeing a string of decent numbers. Employment or unemployment rate is down. Once everybody goes back to work, do you think that we're going to see the retail trading subside, especially now that Gary Gensler came out last week and said that they're going to start putting their foot down or doing something about the gamification of trading, you know, where you push the button and you get some kind of like starburst or something or fireworks for buying. You don't know what price you're buying at. You're just buying. You know, you usually just buy and somehow you buy something, hopefully the price that you want to get. What is the upside and downside of retail trading possibly calming down in, you know, as everybody goes back to work? And the theory is that, yes, when you're at work, you should be working, and not playing on your phone.
I don't really think work has anything to do with it. I think it has to do with if asset prices keep rising, you know, of course, more and more people are going to trade. You know, you had GameStops, you've seen a lot of manipulation in Dogecoin. Dogecoin is an $85 billion market cap. It's bigger than FedEx.
You own that, right? You're a big holder of Dogecoin.
I wish. And I'm not saying anything bad, but it's for me who, you know, is in crypto and we have our own security token and stuff like that. And we went public, you know, we did a lot of work in this and I'm a believer in the industry. When I see Dogecoin where, you know, not bad, $85 billion market cap, you know, bigger than ConocoPhillips, not bad for a company that doesn't give equity to shareholders and doesn't have to report financials. You have no idea what they're doing. That's pretty cool. People are making money on it, but, you know, you're seeing just, you know, people making money on a lot of different things.
And I have a prediction. Mm-hmm. Dogecoin is going to keep on rallying over the 65 cents or whatever it was recently through the Elon Musk SNL and maybe a little bit after from the after effect because it's going to be something there, or at least there's the perception that there's going to be something dropped. Who knows? He may walk on stage with a bunch of the Shiba Inus, whatever they are. What is the dog?
Yeah, something like that.
You know, that would be the skit that you'd want to do. Let him walk on stage and everybody in the SNL cast dresses up like one of these dogs.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to put this in perspective, guys, I mean, with Dogecoin, again, it was set up as something that was a joke, and it's still kind of a joke today. It's no business model. It's $85 billion market cap. When Enron went under, it was $80 billion, one of the biggest frauds in history, and WorldCom was $100 billion. You're up there now. So this, you know, it may continue to go higher. Again, people, if you're going to buy, if you want to crap in a bottle, and people are going to pay $1 million, $2 million, $20 million, whatever people want to pay for it, they'll pay for it. Eventually, they're going to realize, you know what? There's nothing in the bottle. It's garbage. It's crap. So, you know, and the price is going to go down. So, you know, I think
let me write that down. That is our show topic. Crap in a bottle. Crap in a Bottle is the is the title of this show, by the way. Crap in a Bottle.
Make it. Definitely make it that, that's the title. But as right now you're seeing the ESG trade unwind, these things down 60-70%. So
well, let's go back to that. Wait. Let's explain that. ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance. There's a couple of different ways to look at this, right? One is the companies that are meeting certain ESG standards, but I don't think that's what you're talking about, right?
No, I mean, you're seeing a lot of money pour into the system because it has to. The companies are going to, again, they didn't really care about this before Biden. They care about now because they want to be, you know, socially responsible or whatever. You know, forget about statistics if you believe in global warming or whatever, even though we only account for 11% of global warming. So even if we go to zero carbon emissions in 2030, it's going to make zero difference in the U.S. because nobody else is going to do that, even though they say like China and Europe. Forget about that. Facts don't matter. But the thing is, as an investor, you're pouring tons of money into this, into these companies, right, and into these technologies, but you're not really seeing it filter down into earnings or anything. And a lot of these things have run up 300-400%. Now they're down 60-70%. You've seen old SPACs, which a lot of these things are scams. You're going to see these things get crushed even more. They're getting destroyed now. I mean,
took like the solars, the EVs, for example, the lithium-ion batteries. Yeah.
Yes, even battery-type companies. So, but I mean, there are legit players in this industry that are going to do fine. But you know, the Plug Power is to go up to the market cap. What it was, $70-$80. I think it's back down to 20. It's insane. You know, you just it was $7 and it went from 7 to 70 in like 4 or 5 weeks. Funny story. So my wife was like, "Oh, I want to go on Robinhood and start trading." I said,
"Oh, yeah." God.
So she went on there and she bought one stock. And because she was new, they gave her one share of a company. It was Plug Power at, I think, $9. And it went to 70. One
there
share.
There you go. Did she sell?
This is great.
Did
it was she just, sell? It was funny. No, I don't think she sold it. So it was, I mean, it was one share. I don't think she really cared about it. But it was just funny when she was like, "Oh, I want to buy something, my friend." I said, "Go ahead, do it."
Let me tell you something. Seriously, this is a promise to you and the audience. Promise. Mm-hmm. If my wife ever says she wants to go on Robinhood or eToro and trade something, I'm hanging it up.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to send that comment to your wife now.
Yeah. Oh, what a great way to retire, you know? So, but I call it button pushing, right? Where you don't do any research. There was somebody, I talk about this a few times. I don't know if I told you this, but somebody said, "We got to come up with an app that when you press the buy button without doing any research, the phone shocks you." You know? Because there's not a lot of research done just on price, just the price movement, right? "Oh, I think it's looking good. Look at that. It's moving up 10% today. Maybe it'll move up 50. I had a conversation with somebody the other day that will remain nameless. They said, "Well, I'm thinking about buying some Ethereum." I'm like, "Okay, all right. If that's what you want to do, that's great." Now, here in the background, yeah, they say Ethereum's going to go up to 10,000 by the end of the year. I'm like, who's saying that? Like, where's that coming from? You know, reading these message boards and staying within a contained site, which is constantly plugging. I mean, what do you think about these pluggers, right? The I call them the SPAC barkers, like Chamath. Or what about, you know, these crypto creeps, like what's going on with Musk and
Cuban?
Yeah. What's the story? What are they? Are they really trying to be like the investor's best friend, or is this just a big game?
If you notice about those two guys, those two guys need more attention than Hollywood actors and actresses, right? They love the attention. It's not just that they're billionaire. They need to be in the spotlight every second, and that's the easiest way to get in the spotlight. I mean, that's fine. People like that. I have nothing against that. But, you know, Cuban's always been like that. He's got to, you know, he's a billionaire, but he's got to be very flashy. And same with Elon Musk. If things are just, you know, if he's bored, he's got to tweet. It's got to be controversial. He's got to be out there, and that's fine. But I have to tell you, so for me, Wall Street Unplugged, the podcast, I had my nephew on, who's 21, and it turned out to be Greg. It's so much positive feedback, and I respect him a lot for coming on because he was telling me, you know, he had a portfolio and he had about 12 grand in it, and I think he started at 4, went to 12, did very well with these situations, and they all started to crash, and there were ESG names and marijuana names and stuff. So then I got him on, a lot of courage to come on, right? I didn't like, you know, rip him apart. Yeah, sure. I just wanted to understand. I was asking him questions like, you know, what does this company do? He's like, "I don't know. I got it off of YouTube, off of this person. And, you know, I saw it here and they're supposed to be really good." And he knew nothing about the companies. I mean, you're investing in things you don't, which is fine. At that age, you're supposed to do it. He's 21. But that's what we're seeing a lot of. Like people, I guarantee you 90% plus, probably 95% plus, do not understand that you are not getting an equity stake in Dogecoin, which means that if Microsoft comes in, it's an $85 billion valuation, and say, "We're going to pay $300 billion for this," you get nothing as a shareholder. You're not a shareholder. You don't own equity. It's you own the utility of Dogecoin, and there's no utility.
When your share value go up?
No. Why would it go up?
You mean they're you're talking about you're saying they're going to take it over, which whatever that means.
They'll so the stock has nothing to do with the company. They'll take over the company. It has nothing to do with the crypto. The crypto is not a representative of an equity stake in the company. So when they buy the technology, you're not getting that price. Right. It's kind of like when Facebook bought Oculus. All those people, what was it, GoFundMe, whatever it was, on you know, the free sites that they say, oh, you know, fund us. They didn't realize that they didn't have an equity stake. And, you know, they gave him a headset. Here you go. Here's a headset. They got bought for what? $2 billion. And you don't have an equity stake. Like, people don't know that with these utility tokens, with all of them. You don't have an equity stake. They're not providing equity. The value is tied to the utility. And if they don't have that utility, like, you can't use that to buy something else or do whatever. Like, the Binance token has tons of utilities. And you can use that token and you get trading fee, discount trading fees. You can use it for travel. You can use it, there's so many different uses. That's the utility of the token. But it's not an equity stake. And the fact that so many people don't know this is, you know, listen, it's working now just like SPACs. SPACs worked until they don't, and they don't when the retail investor starts getting wrecked. Because all these guys.
That's got to lead us into NFTs, doesn't it?
I mean, NFTs, look, 90%
is BS. It's kind of interesting, but it's bloated.
90% is BS. I mean, when I see, you know, Gronk, you know, he can't even have the NFL logo, right? He's basically spiking a football after a touchdown in the Super Bowl. I could watch that a million times, right? So when you see these actors and actresses all going into here, it's crazy. But then even the one that sold for over, what was it, $6 million or whatever, whatever it was.
$66 million. That was
something that was actually original. It was like over a certain amount of period. I mean, you know, sometimes you could have digital art that is amazing and people are going to pay for it, but not everyone who has something. I mean, what are we going to do? Like our podcasts and sell them to people?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just crazy. Yeah, I mean, listen, how are you going to do it? And that's why you've seen everyone do it. But
ready to go.
This industry is gone.
This podcast is up for an NFT right now. And that means that nothing. You can listen to it just like you would anywhere else. Because that's some of the problem with the NFTs, non-fungible tokens, by the way, where you get you can become the original owner, which could pass on and you could sell it. And you may be able to even cut deals within it when you get maybe some revenue from it. There's some interesting things. But I mean, as fast and furious as this came about, and all of a sudden, it's like a thing. Now, there's some interesting ones on there. There's SPACs that are
on where? When you say on there, let me
qualify. There's some interesting aspects of what you can possibly utilize it for, the NFTs. For example, this is a little bit thin, but just follow me here. Playboy opened up as a SPAC, right? Playboy's company. And there is a possibility, I guess, they're going to sell their covers or something as NFTs. Or, for example, Topps playing cards, where you could be original owner of, I don't know, Tom Seaver, 1978 original rookie card. Mm-hmm. And you'll be the only one that has that digital ownership of it. Now, I'm not sure what happens if somebody digitizes the one that they have at their house and then sells that. I don't know how that works. And do you get sued? I'm not sure. But there is some interesting thing. There's a company called MUDS, M-U-D-S, and Playboy, P-L-B-Y, are traded as exciting things to do with SPACs. But I don't know. I can't really wrap my head around how it's like these things pop up and become the greatest investments of all time.
And listen, you know, Marilyn Monroe and getting a digital, that I understand the value in that. I get it, right? People are huge fans, a Playboy thing. It was a big, I get it. But there's something I got to tell you, a lot of people don't know about NFTs, right? The reason why I asked you, you know, where did you see this? Because some of these sites, they have a blockchain. Some of these sites have blockchain. Right. And you're going to list it on their blockchain. If they go out of business.
If who goes out of business? NFT, who goes?
If the company that's holding it on their blockchain.
Oh, yeah.
Goes bankrupt, you lose your NFT where you're storing it. I bet you nobody knows that, right?
You're not thinking about that
because it never happened.
But can you do an offsite cold storage?
I don't know if you could do it with an NFT. I'm not too sure, but depending on where you're buying it might say, hey, we're going to host this for you. And then maybe they charge for it as they're hosting it for you. But if that blockchain, and you could see this, right? You see a lot, there's probably a lot of fraud going on in this industry as it is, because there's not a lot of regulation. If you see one of these companies shut down, you like people don't realize you're done. I gotta
think that it's kind of like in a very plain, dumbed down version for me, that if you have like an Adobe document that's digitally signed and you keep, and that's the only one, and it has a particular hash or a serial number or some kind of other authentication, that you have that's the only one. I can take that as a file that has all the attachments to it and the authentication documentation with it, that I could store it somewhere. I would have to think that NFTs, I don't know this answer, but I would have to think that anybody that's spending any money on NFTs would want that, and it should be something that is relatively easy to do, just like holding a cryptocurrency offline in hardware, a hard storage, cold storage, or just a filing system. I don't know. It would seem like that, especially if you're going to pay some money.
I mean, if you notice, though, the NFT trend is really, it's starting to die down a lot more. So it was really, really big, and it's definitely starting to die down.
That was so Beanie Baby.
Yeah, it was pretty much.
So Beanie Baby. So reopening, I want to talk to you about that a little bit. This whole concept of returning to normal, we're seeing that there's a lot of things that are doing quite incredibly. Look at the cruise ships that nobody's cruising yet, really. And, you know, you're seeing these major moves to the upside on those, and retail shopping centers are making a big comeback, and Macy's, and, you know, you look at some of the places that you would be like, well, they really should be out of business, right? But they're doing pretty well. Airlines are doing well. Hotels. Now, one of the things that's really fascinating when you have these kinds of events, like a financial meltdown, or in this case, a pandemic, which, you know, caused a lot of pain, but yet at the same time, it caused many of these companies to cut back. So, for example, I stayed at a hotel in St. Augustine, and the first thing they tell you is, by the way, there is not going to be any housekeeping service. If you want towels, just call down and we'll get you towels, but they do not make up the room or do anything while you're here. Because under the whole theory that, you know, hey, we are risking our lives to come and clean to begin with, and we don't want to spread the, you know, the COVID with people that are in their rooms and possibly infect you or you infect someone else, so therefore we're staying out of your room. So therefore, housekeeping is ixnade. Room service, forget about it. Now, I went downstairs for the breakfast. You get breakfast included. Honestly, it was all like, it was bagels in a vacuum-sealed plastic bag. It was horrendous. Okay? There was like rubber bacon. And you had to stand all the way away from everybody. You know, I don't know. It was really weird. And I think what's going to happen now, just like what happened on airlines, where you used to get on an airline, you had a drink, you sat down, you got some warm nuts, you got a meal. Now it's like, okay, what do you want? Chips, $2. Blanket, $1.50. So what's going to happen out of this event is going to be a much different view of what service is and what expectations are from places. Because I think they're going to be hard-pressed to ever go back.
I don't know. I mean, the vaccine's getting distributed. People feel uncomfortable. Again, you know, people are using that common sense when it comes to the vaccine. So it's...
I know people that have gotten the vaccine and still won't eat indoors.
But why if you get the vaccine? I don't understand.
I don't understand.
Why are you, like, pissed off at everyone who didn't get it? Like, I don't get that. Like, you can't get it from them. You can't give it to them. But you're angry at some of the people, that even if they had COVID already, right? So I just... Yeah, you know, I think that's going to die down, right? And you're going to see more and more things opening up. So... Listen, the reopen trade, right? This is something that we did very well in our newsletters. We bought Avis when Hertz went bankrupt because, you know, they were over leveraged and we knew it was going to be great. And we're up tremendously on that stock, but not all of them are the same. Like you mentioned the cruise lines, right? The cruise lines have a higher enterprise value today than they did, which assumes a debt, than they did pre-COVID. And they don't have a ship in the water. I mean, want to talk about expectations.
Unbelievable.
But now you're looking at hotels are opening. You're looking at casinos are opening. Caesars numbers were fantastic, with record numbers. And these companies cut costs tremendously. You know, airlines starting to generate revenue. Everybody I talked to in the past pretty much 2 to 3 months, and I flew about 3 months ago, it was really crowded. And you know, planes are packed now. They're getting busy. Again, they're getting hurt because, you know, overseas, especially Canada. Canada's like, you know, it's probably more free in North Korea than it is in Canada right now. But, yeah, that's another story. Europe is really, really close too. So, but, you know, you're looking at some of these industries. I mean, you know, it's just Red Rock Resorts, the company we recommend. We're up tremendously on. Yeah, you know, Avis. You know, Textron's another one that focuses on aviation and systems. And
look at Rick's. Have you looked at Rick's?
You know, no, Rick, not yet.
Rick's Cabaret?
Didn't they start doing like drive-throughs? Like,
I don't know. I got that stock has been on a tear. I don't know where it is today, but it was on a tear.
Always find a way. Sex and vice and drugs and alcohol always find a way, right? People are always going to find a way. They need their vice, but there's actually set up drive-throughs now, and you know, separate stalls.
Oh God.
You know, it's crazy.
Don't say no more. I'm getting up.
they just adapt, right? But anyway, there's a lot of good names in the reopen trade. And you're saying a lot of these shopping centers are open and they're starting to generate a lot of revenue. Why? Because people are getting handed free checks and they have a ton of money to spend. They had handcuffs on for most of the year, where they couldn't go out, they couldn't do anything, and now they're dying. Anyone who has kids, I have two young girls, I love them to death. I'm dying to go away.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Right. You know, I love them to death, and we spend a lot. And this is me in Florida, where we've been open for a while. You know, some places, New York's just starting to open, right? And same in some places, California. So, you know,
people
are going to
go crazy. If Florida is any kind of, well, remember something, Florida, everybody's coming to as well. It's not like everybody's going to go to New York for the summer, per se. Yeah. I mean, you may go out to Montauk or the Hamptons, but Florida has been the perfect storm. I mean, look at housing prices down here. Look at what's going on with
the tax structure, right? I mean, look at the
taxes. No tax structure.
Holy cow. I mean, you're looking at 55% plus taxes in New York and California. And I don't care if you make $50 or $3 million, you're going to get your taxes raised. They have no money coming in. They just told everyone we're going to do the redistribution of wealth. The New York Mayor actually came out and said that. We're going to it's loud and clear to read. So we're going to take money from the rich and give it to the poor, right? Which has never worked in any society for 500 years.
Well, it's simple. What the result will be was that people will leave.
People are leaving, means how are they going to generate the revenue?
But you know what's happening is people are leaving New York, and with the prices of the houses in New York, and they're looking at places like Texas, and they're looking at places like Florida, and they see a house in Florida that's maybe, I'm speaking a number, $500,000. And like, oh my God, in New York, that house would be like $1 million. So what are they doing? So they bid $750 for it.
Yeah. And now, I mean, some companies are going back to the workplace, but now that you could stay, you don't really need to be in New York City. I know, I lived there for 40 years. You don't need to be there. So, you know, some Jamie Dimon said back to work, I get it, and Goldman Sachs and stuff. But a lot of these companies, you know, if you could still work, you know, remotely, why live in one of the highest priced areas when it's one of these areas are now the most dangerous areas in the country? Yeah. Why? Yeah. Of course they're going to leave.
Yep. All right, let's wrap it up. Any other ideas, any other thoughts? I know that you had talked about some of the cryptos, and obviously you have a newsletter that focuses in on the cryptos and some areas that people have not ever heard of, some things that you've read. I saw some of the numbers, Frank. Unbelievable growth on some of these.
I mean, it's a bull market in cryptos, but there's a lot of things that work, right? And we've taken an approach for the last 3 years where, you know, very smart. We took a lot of money off the table. And when this thing crashed, we were able to get into a lot of things. And I mean, just to see some of the gains in this. And you and I have been invested for a long time, right? But in our crypto intelligence news, I've never seen anything like this. And it's no guarantee that, you know, the future return is going to be like this, but I've never seen like the Binance token we bought at 14, it's 675. It's a 44X gain. Ethereum we bought for 138, it's a 23X gain. You know, Engine Coin 25X. I mean, you don't see Voyager Digital, which is a stock. We actually have stocks that are focused on, you know, that Galaxy Digital is another one, Marathon Patent Group. These things are up tremendously. These are pure plays that everyone's playing catch up with. Why? Because it's now a $2 trillion plus market. So the Goldman Sachs, the Morgan Stanley's, they partner with it. Now they can move serious money within this industry. It's a real industry now. And listen, Dogecoins I'd worry about, the XRPs I'd worry about, some of those. But, you know, we're really careful with our research. We do the homework, good management teams and our performance. Listen, you know,
even XRP with all the trouble they have is moving like crazy.
Yeah. What they do is they keep releasing tokens so that the supply just keeps coming out and, you know, they're making they said they were going to start burning those tokens, which is like a buyback. They didn't, right? That's how they make them. They just keep releasing them, but there's no utility function. If you have that token, there's no utility function. You don't get equity stake, but it's a bull market and everything's going up. However, a lot of the names we've done tons of research on, the average position in our portfolio is up over 800% and there's 16 names in that position. So, you know, it's really cool. Mm. It's an industry I'm in totally because we raise money through a security token. We're the first ever to do so. We trade on Emerge Exchange as a foreign exchange and we offer a dividend and you have an equity stake in our business. So you can participate in our growth. So this is an industry I take very seriously. I base my company behind it. And, you know, that's why when I see the Dogecoins, I get a little ticked off.
But yeah.
Overall, there's a lot of great ideas, lots of disruptions, DeFi, NFTs, it's going to continue to come with blockchain. And, you know, it's a way to position yourself through crypto intelligence.
And especially if we're looking for alternatives. I mean, listen, everybody knows that I have my opinions on a lot of this crypto, that some of the pricing I think has been insane on a lot of this. As you brought out, I mean, obviously, if there is no utility on it, what's the point of it all? And just buying blindly without knowing what the point of it all is another problem. But you know what? I trade it. I hold some of it. I've held some of it from 2017. But at the same time, I think, you know, it's like, yeah, but really? I mean, let me see some financials. Let me see really what we're doing. If there's nothing there, what can I say? But people, again, are just blindly doing it. But that's why you need the research behind it. CurzioResearch.com is where you need to go for that, Frank Curzio. We're going to end it right there. I want to thank you so much for joining me and always enlightening us on what's going on. And we'll speak to you soon, I guess, okay?
Always a pleasure, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Thanks. And that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you're going to have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day again to everyone out there, and hope you have a wonderful time. Take care of your mom. Make sure that you do the right by her. Get her a nice gift, will you? Call her up. Tell her you love her. I'm going to do the same right now. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you again soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.